Hello, I'm Father Ambrose Little, the director of the Thomistic Institute. Before we begin the next great TI lecture, a quick word with you. Thanks to donors like you, our content is cutting through the digital noise with the truth of the Catholic intellectual tradition. But we can't keep it coming without your help. If you enjoy programs like the TI Podcast and Aquinas 101, please consider a small contribution of $25 or more. You can use the link in the description or visit our website to donate. Your generosity ensures that these important programs will continue to lead souls to the truth all over the world. So please enjoy this episode, and may God bless you and keep you in His grace.
Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
There's a saying in Japan that people still say today. In Japanese, it's Ikari no Hiroshima, Inori no Nagasaki. And that means Hiroshima rages, Nagasaki prays. And it's actually something that was developed, a saying that was developed after the bombs were dropped more than 80 years ago to end World War II. The atomic bombs, but it's still said today. And there's still people who use that phrase, and it also still means something, right? It still means something. So I've been to Nagasaki a number of times. I'm currently working on a book about Nagasaki, but I was there this summer. So I was there in August, and I actually went to the commemorations for both the August 6th bombing of Hiroshima and the August 9th bombing of Nagasaki, and they were the 80-year commemorations of the bombings in both places. And, you know, I'm familiar with this saying, and I was kind of curious as to whether or not it would be evident, right? Hiroshima rages, Nagasaki prays. So I was curious about that. So here are a couple examples of the sort of thing that I'm talking about. So this is Hiroshima, August 6, 1945, so exactly 80 years after the bombing. And this was a common sight. So this is a group of people protesting. And there's someone with a mic, there's police escorts, and this was happening all over Hiroshima. I saw this for several days. It wasn't just on the 9th. It was the day before, it was the day after, and this kind of protest. And this is the same kind of group up closer, and you can see the woman with the mic. She would say, you know, no more war, no more Hiroshima, no more Nagasaki, and people would chant it back. And again, you see some of the kind of police escorts. There was one exception, and it's an exception that proves the rule. And this was a guy that was nearby, and he was a kind of counter-protester, if you will. So a single guy with this sign, he's very happy for me to take a picture of him. And you can see that what he's saying there is saying, pray quietly for peace. So he's kind of like objecting to the kind of political protesting, right? So after Hiroshima, I went down to Nagasaki, and it's a very different story there. It's much more peaceful. There isn't the kind of anger and protest and activism. This is typical, the lighting of candles. These candles are kind of concentric circles around the epicenter where the bomb was dropped. This is a peace ceremony on the night before the 9th, and you can see the kind of examples of praying. And this is, again, the same peace ceremony, a single guy playing a violin, and that behind him is the monument for the epicenter of where the bomb was dropped on Nagasaki. So very clear differences. And the question is why? Why do you have a situation where one city's response can be characterized by peace and prayer, and the other one is characterized by anger and political protest and activism? Well, in order to answer that question, a good place to start is to look at the life of this man, Takashi Nagai. Does anyone know about Takashi Nagai? Just curious, you know about Takashi Nagai, okay. So Takashi Nagai was a Japanese radiologist who taught at Nagasaki University and practiced at its hospital. The story of Nagai is an amazing one. He grew up with Shinto and Buddhist influences in his life, but eventually he became an atheist, a self-described scientific materialist. This is kind of where he had arrived, and he went to medical school. And while he was in medical school, his atheism began to soften. And there were a couple influences that that caused this. One is he began to read Pascal. He took an interest in the writings of Pascal. The other was that he took a room near the Urakami Cathedral with a Catholic family, the Moriyama family in Urakami. Urakami is a suburb of Nagasaki. It used to be its own separate village, but now it's a suburb. And while he was with this family, he begins to learn about the history of Christianity in Japan, about the hidden Christians, or the Kakuri Christan, who carried on the faith for centuries while in hiding in Japan. And this family, the Moriyama family, was part of the community that went to the cathedral. And this is a picture of the cathedral. It was the largest it was the largest church in East Asia at the time. And the home, the Moriyama home, was not far from the cathedral. And so this community and the cathedral and even the bells of the cathedral began to also work on Nagai. One of his very first biographers, a guy named Yakichi Kataoka, said this about Nagai. He said, "Behind the university, across a little stream, on a hill facing the university grounds, towered the Urakami Cathedral. Nagai's eyes were drawn to the red bricks as this cathedral, and his ears bent towards the Angelus bells. The yearning Nagai felt toward these bells would not fade until his dying day." Okay? So these are some of the influences that began to work on Nagai. And so he learns about the history of Christianity and the history of the persecution and the suffering of Catholics in Japan. So a little background on that. The first missionary to Japan was Francis Xavier, a Spanish Jesuit who arrived in 1549. It was a very fruitful ministry at first. By 1579, there were about 100,000 converts in Japan. And from very early on, Nagasaki was a central location of the growing Christian community in Japan. Between 1580 and 1587, Nagasaki was actually a Jesuit territory, a very unusual relationship. But the daimyo, one of the feudal lords in Japan, gave Nagasaki to the Jesuits. So they controlled it for 7 years. The daimyo was Omura Sumatada, one of the daimyos who converted to Christianity. And he gave the territory to the Jesuits. By the beginning of the 17th century, there were about 300,000 converts now in Japan. However, after about 40 years of successful missionary work, the most powerful daimyo, Hideyoshi Toyotomi, turns on the Christians, and he issues an edict expelling all the Christian missionaries. So this was in 1587. So not even 40 years after Xavier lands in Kagoshima, launching the beginning of missionary work in Japan. Now, the edict was only partially enforced, and the persecution of Christians slowly intensified over the next several decades, such that by 1597, 26 Catholics were arrested in Kyoto and marched to Nagasaki. The torturous journey took 30 days and covered 450 miles. And Nagasaki was chosen as the place for their crucifixion precisely because it was such a Catholic stronghold. In fact, there were so many churches in Nagasaki that was once referred to as Little Rome. And so the authorities intentionally marched these Catholics from Kyoto to Nagasaki because they wanted to send a message to the Christians that this is what will happen to you if you practice the faith. So once in Nagasaki, they were put on wood crosses, and they were crucified. And this is on Nishizaka Hill in Nagasaki, which is about 1.5 miles from the epicenter of the bomb. So it's right close to where the bomb was dropped on Nagasaki. One of the 26 martyrs, as they're referred to in Japan, was a man named Paul Mickey. Paul Mickey was about to become the first native Japanese priest, ordained priest. And just before he was killed, he cried out, giving a short sermon of encouragement to the Christians who were there. There are about 4,000 Christians gathered to watch this. And he encouraged them to keep the faith And he said, importantly, he said he forgave Hideyoshi Toyotomi and the others who were responsible for his execution. Then he gave his farewell song, "Lord, into your hands I commend my spirit." So all 26 of them were killed, and this was just the beginning of years and years of persecution for the Japanese Christians. The restrictions on Christianity continued to intensify. In 1614, there was an edict banning Christianity throughout the entire country. So Christianity became officially illegal. Thereafter, the Japanese Christians were forced to go underground, that is, to go into hiding. That's why they're referred to as the hidden Christians, or the Kakuri Kishitan. Nevertheless, they carried on the faith in hiding for 2.5 centuries. 2.5 centuries they carried on without public services, without priests, and without most of the sacraments central to the Christian, to the Catholic faith. Now, a large group of them moved to Urakami, north of Nishisaka Hill, where the cathedral is. It was, as I mentioned, it used to be a separate village. Now it's a suburb of Nagasaki. And rather than being threatened by this, the courage of the martyrs actually emboldened the faith of the Christians. And actually you had more conversions, and it strengthened their faith. In order to kind of stamp out Christianity, the authorities tried to get the faithful to apostatize, to give up the faith. Well, during these years of hiding, the persecution of the Christians was intense. If discovered, Christians were imprisoned, they were sometimes brutally tortured, and sometimes killed. Great pressure was put on them to apostatize. Well, toward this end, sometimes what they would do is they would make them step on what's called the fumie. The fumie was a flat image, bronze or wood, of Jesus or Mary, and they would make the Christians step on it in order to ferret out the Christians. But in Urakami, they saw this actually as a form of persecution. That is, being made to step on this was awful. They hated it. There are stories of, I've heard a number of stories, but one of them was that they would go to they would say a kind of confession afterwards, but then as a penance, they would wash their feet, the foot that had stepped on the fumie, and then after they washed it, they would drink the water of the... From having washed their feet, and some of them, sometimes they would step on them with the kind of Japanese straw sandals, and they would burn the sandals or shred them, mix them into water, and then drink it as a form of penance for having stepped on the fumie. They also, another thing they did was they would use statues that looked like they were Buddhist statues, but they were actually Christian. So this is a Buddhist a deity canon, and they would appropriate it as the Maria canon. So it looks like Maria, Mary, holding the Christ child, but if authorities came in, it would look like a Buddhist statue, and they would thus not be suspicious. Now, these are all over, these Maria canons are all over Kyushu Island, and some of them, if you turn them around, they have etched into the back a cross. So again, a way to, in a clandestine way, to carry on the faith. Okay. So these are some of the ways in which they would carry on the faith. They were forced underground, and as I said, they carried on for about 2.5 centuries. Well, eventually, because of international pressures, including from the United States, importantly and ironically, the international pressures eventually made Japan open up. And so in the late 19th century, they began to open up, and one of the early ports that allowed for Westerners to come back in was Nagasaki, and missionaries were allowed back in. And in 1864, this church was built in the southern part of Nagasaki. It's called the Ohura Church, and it's dedicated to the 26 martyrs. It actually faces the 26 martyrs. It was a Jesuit, I'm sorry, it wasn't Jesuit, it was French missionary priest who built this church. But interestingly and importantly, this church was built in what's called the foreign concession or the foreign district. That is, it was only for foreigners. So it was a trade route, right? And so foreigners who came from various countries, including France, this is where they would go to church. Japanese Christians still couldn't go. Christianity was still illegal for the Japanese. Nevertheless, the Urakami Catholics heard about this church and they become interested. They want to figure it out. They want to investigate it, even though it's illegal. Well, there was a Japanese Jesuit lay helper. The term they use is dojuku. It's like a deacon or catechist. And his name was Bastian or Sebastian. And he ministered to the hidden Christians back in the 17th century, the first half of the 17th century. He himself was also martyred. He was, in his case, he was tortured for years and then he had his head cut off. But before he died, he said to the hidden Christians, he gave a prophecy. It's Bastian's prophecy. Something they still talk about today. And he said, in seven generations, the missionaries will come back to Japan. And you will know that they are authentically Catholic if there are these three things evident. One, the priest would be celibate. Two, they would venerate Mary. And three, they would be in communion with Rome or with Papa Sama. Right? So they're going to come back. And this is, you'll know it's the authentic Catholic Church if these features are evident. So the Urukami Catholics hear about the Oura Church. And it had been at this point, this is now 1864 when it's finished, 1865 is when the Urukami Catholics tried to go visit it. It had been seven generations, just in keeping with Bastian's prophecy. So it's Lent at the time, what the hidden Christians referred to as the sad season. I love that. And they decide they're going to go down to this church. They were led by a group of women, and they went down to the Oura Church, and they snuck in. And in the church was one of the missionary priests, Father Bernard Pettigen, and he's praying in the church. And these Urukami Catholics go up to him and talk to him, and they say, our hearts and your heart are the same. And then they also said, show us a statue of Mary. So they want to make sure that this thing, this church reflects the criteria that was articulated in the Bastian prophecy. So he finally can't quite understand them at first, but finally understands what they're saying. And he takes them to a side chapel and shows them this statue of Mary. And so they realize that this is the real deal. It's still referred to as the discovery of the hidden Christians of a great moment. It's still commemorated and celebrated in Nagasaki today. In fact, it was 2015 that they had the 150th anniversary of the discovery of the hidden Christians. Outside this church is a relief, and this depicts that scene. The scene, that's Father Pettigen, and these are the Urukami Catholics, and do you see how he's pointing to the statue of Mary? That's the same statue I just showed you. That's what he's pointing to there. And that depicts this scene, the discovery of the hidden Christians. Now, these are real people from the community, and this woman's name is Teru Moriuchi. Remember that name, Teru Moriuchi. It'll be on the exam. So in my my research, and I actually lived for a semester in Nagasaki, and among the people I interviewed was this man, a guy named Murasu Matsuo. Now, Murasu Matsuo is a direct descendant of Teru Moriuchi, five generations removed, and in his home, there's a shrine, and the shrine has as you can see, it has a cross and flowers, and it has a picture of him, his son, and his granddaughter, and you see his granddaughter's pointing to Teru Moriuchi. So Teru Moriuchi is his great-great-grandmother, and I think what this shrine illustrates is the extent to which this history influences the faith of the people today. It still influences their faith. There's still a sense of pride and inspiration from these ancestors who had carried on the faith in very, very difficult circumstances. Okay, so Teru Moriuchi and the others informed Father Pettigen and the other missionary priests about their hidden community and the secret places where they held their services. So Father Pettigen then would dress up as a farmer and sneak out at night and go to their communities, baptizing the children, saying Mass. And again, this is the first time they've been able to say Mass in over 200 years. So it was a great kind of incredible time for the Urukami Catholics. And as a consequence, they became more bold. Bastian's prophecy had come true. The missionary priests are now ministering to them the sacraments. Father Pettigen is going around and learning about other communities, not just in Urukami, but on the Goto Islands and Sotome, and finds there are about 50,000 hidden Christians who had carried on the faith all these years. So the Christians become more bold, they become less hidden, and they get in trouble. Why? Because it's still illegal, right? Remember, it's still illegal for them to be Christian. So the authorities crack down again, and they put them through another persecution. And it's really the last major persecution that took place from 1867 to 1873, and it's referred to as the Yom Bon Kazuri, or the Fourth Persecution. And so what happens is the Catholics in Urakami are exiled to 22 different places around Japan. They want to get them away from the missionaries and away from each other. So they exile them. They send them off. About 664 of them die during this time. And then eventually, in 1873, about 1,900 of them return to Urakami. Now, one of the locations where they were exiled was a place called Tsuwano. Now, Tsuwano, again, like I said, they were exiled all over Japan. Tsuwano is on Honshu Island, the island north of Kyushu Island, and it's west of Hiroshima, interestingly. So I went to I went up to Tsuwano, and I wanted to investigate this place where this group had been exiled. And it's this beautiful little kind of traditional Japanese village. And to the west of it, you walk up this a trail, and you arrive at this place, which is where they were tortured and held in prison. Now, interestingly, and I didn't know this was going to happen, they were actually saying on that day, that very day, a commemorative mass. So a mass was being said for the martyrs who had suffered there. Now, and again, just as with the earlier picture I showed you, the juxtaposition here of the faith of the people today against the backdrop of this history of persecution and suffering is quite evident. Because you see here, right, here's the Japanese priest saying mass, there's the parishioners, and behind it is a statue of Mary and then a cage with a man in it, right? This is one of the forms of torture. So they would put them in this cage, almost naked, and just leave them there, give them very little food overnight, it was cold. And the particular person depicted here is a man named Yasutaro Mori. The story of Yasutaro Mori is that he was put there, and the people in the prison, the other Catholics in the prison, got worried about him because it was very cold at night. Tsuwano is not like Nagasaki. Nagasaki has a very kind of mild, temperate climate. This was colder. It would snow and so forth. And they became concerned about him. So another one of the Urakami Catholics in the prison actually took a board out and dug a hole so that he can go out and visit him. So he went out and visited him. This man's name was Jinzaburo Moriyama. So Jinzaburo Moriyama goes out and visits Yasutaro, and he says, "We're concerned about you. It gets very cold at night. How are you doing?" And Yasutaro said, "Yeah, it is cold and it's hard, but I'm doing okay, because around midnight, every night, a woman with a blue veil appears to me and talks to me until sunset." And he says to Jinzaburo Moriyama, "Don't tell anyone about this until after I die." 3 days later, he dies, and Jinzaburo Moriyama tells the rest of the community about the apparition of Mary that he experienced. So this is a closer picture of that, the statue of Mary and the cage. He wasn't the only one subjected to this torture, but he was one who died during it. And this is a relief that's at the same site. It's just a different location for the same site. And all of these are real people, and they all have amazing stories that I could tell you. And I will just tell you, I'll just point out a few. So this is Yasutaro Mori right there, the one who's closest to Mary. This young girl is Mori Iwanaga. She was the daughter of the Misukata, which was the baptizer. They had roles in the hidden Christians, and one of them was the person who baptized. Misukata means water person. So she's the daughter, 5 years old, and her parents are there as well. And the authorities separate her from the rest of the community, including her parents, and they have candy. And they're basically being starved. They got very little food. And they have candy, and they say, "If you renounce the faith of your parents, we will give you this candy." So a little Mori, 5-year-old Mori, stands there with great resolution, shakes her head, and says, "They have better things than that in heaven," and refuses. And she and her parents are among those who actually died in Tsuwano. A couple other people to point out. So this man there is Jinzaburo Moriyama, the one who dug out of the prison. To his right is a guy named Senamon Takagi. They were the two kind of leaders of the group, and they suffered tremendously. I mean, the kind of torture that they were put under is just unimaginable. So this is, right here, this man is Yujiro Moriyama, so those guys are brothers, and this is their sister, Matsu Moriyama. Yujiro was also tortured brutally and eventually died from his tortures. But before he died, he said to his brother and his sister, you will survive, and you will go back, and he says to Jinzaburo Moriyama, you will have a son who will become a priest, and Matsu, you will take care of children, basically, teach and take care of children. And then finally, one last person, this is Teru Moriuchi. So she was the woman from the first relief to that her little great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter was pointing to, right? She's the only one in both reliefs, but again, it just illustrates the extent to which they were exercising great courage to go to the Oro Church, because they ended up having to go to the Yombo Kazuri. And here's some, that's Jinzaburo Moriyama on the right, and this is Senamon Takagi. Those are the two leaders I pointed to, both of whom survived, both of whom go back to Urakami eventually. When I was back in Nagasaki in May of 2023, they held a number of events celebrating the 150th anniversary of the return from the fourth persecution, or the Yomban Kazuri. So here are pictures of it. This is, they would come back by boat, and they would come up from the harbor and go up to the cathedral. So these are descendants, current day Catholics, walking the journey and going to the church. And this is, again, celebrating the return, or commemorating the return of the Yomban Kazuri. And then you see here in the church, they had a commemorative mass. And those banners there are the 22 locations that people went. And the people carrying them are some of the descendants of the people who had been exiled to those places. When they returned in 1873, their homes and their fields were in shambles. They had to rebuild their community. However, they now had some more religious freedom. And so for the first time, they could be more public. Even though there was still a lot of stigma and there was still persecution and they didn't have full religious freedom, they could, you know, be more public. So they start building the cathedral. And here's an image of that cathedral. I showed it to you before. They began working on it in 1895, and they didn't finish it until 1914. So it was just about 30 years later that they built at great sacrifice, brick by brick. People would give up meals to buy a brick to build this cathedral, was destroyed by the atom bomb. Again, about 30 years later after it was finished. Okay. So Nagai is fully aware of this history. He knows, he hears about this history from the Moriyama family, and eventually he decides to become Catholic. And he goes to the cathedral, and he introduces himself to that priest on the right. Now, remember the prophecy of the younger Yujiro Moriyama? He said that his brother, this is Jinzaburo, and sister Matsu would return. Jinzaburo got married, he had a son who became a priest, and that is the priest that Nagai talked to when he decided to become Catholic. And that picture is taken in front of the old cathedral. Okay, so Nagai becomes Catholic. He, when he's baptized and received into the church, he takes Paul Mickey's, he takes the name Paul as his confirmation name after Paul Mickey. That was the one, the martyr who died among the 26 martyrs. So, he's very aware of this history. It's very much influencing his mind, his thinking. He ends up marrying Midori Moriyama, the daughter of the family he lived with, and he completes medical school and becomes a doctor and a radiologist in Nagasaki. So in the summer of 1945, Nagai and Midori are married. They have two children. He's now the head of the radiology department at the Nagasaki Hospital, and he's the dean of the radiology at the medical school. On August 6th, the bomb is dropped on Hiroshima. Takashi and Midori send their children with relatives out into the country to protect them, but they stay in Nagasaki. On the morning of August 9th, 1945, the bomb was dropped at 11:02, about 1.5 miles off target, and exploded about 650 yards from the cathedral in Urakami. At the time, two Japanese priests were hearing confession, and there were about two dozen Catholics going to confession. All of them were killed. About 8,500 out of a population of 12,000 Catholics were killed by the bomb, including Midori Nagai. The cathedral was destroyed by the blast, and Takashi Nagai watched the church go up in flames from where he was at the hospital. And here are a couple pictures of the cathedral after it had been destroyed by the atom bomb. And again, Nagai watched this. Now, the hospital was about 550 yards from the cathedral, and Nagai was in the radiology department. He was thrown about 10 feet. He was in a bunch of rubble. He was injured. His right temple, an artery, was severed. He also got a blast of radiation. He already had leukemia that he got from his work as a radiologist, but he got more radiation exposure. Nevertheless, he gets up and, with a few survivors in the hospital, begins to care for the many victims of the bomb. Eventually, Nagai made his way to his home, and he found only the charred bones of his wife, Midori, and in the bones, near her hands, were the melted remains of her rosary beads. And you can see those today in the little museum that's next to Nagai's home. So she was holding these at the time of the blast. It's beyond horrifying to describe all that Nagai saw. He wrote about it, described it as hell. He was severely injured, but nevertheless, he and others began to work to care for others. And they set up a little relief mission about 3 miles from the epicenter of the bomb in a place called Mitsuyama. And you can see this little relief mission, and that's Nagai on the right. He has the bandage because of the injury on his on his right temple. And he and others gave of themselves in spite of all these difficulties. Carrying on, even though he himself was injured, caring for the victims of the bomb. Well, he does this for several weeks, but then his health starts to deteriorate, right? About a month after the bomb, the opening in his head begins to bleed again. He also manifests signs of severe A-bomb sickness. His temperature rises to 104, stays there for about a week. 3 doctors say he's dying. A priest comes to give him last rites. However, at this moment, Midori's mother had gone to the Hongochi Monastery in the southeastern part of Nagasaki and gotten water from the Hongochi Monastery. And here is an image of the Hongochi Monastery, Lourdes Grotto. And she got water from this. Does anyone know who started the Hongochi Monastery? It was the Capuchin Franciscan priest, Maximilian Kolbe. You know who that is? So Maximilian Kolbe actually lived in Nagasaki between 1930 and 1936. And he and Nagai knew each other. In fact, he'd actually done x-rays Nagai had x-rayed Kolbe because Kolbe struggled with tuberculosis. But Kolbe was called back to Poland, and famously in Poland, in Auschwitz, several prisoners were selected to be killed. And one of them was a man with a family, and Kolbe offered himself to take the place of that man, and was killed in Auschwitz. So Midori's mother takes, and this is an image of Kolbe at that Hongochi Monastery. That monastery is still active. It's all Japanese priests now, but it's still there. She puts some water from the Hongochi Monastery onto Nagai's lips. Nagai prays to Kolbe, and he's immediately healed. That is, the injury in the right temple heals up. He regains his strength and incredibly lives for another 5.5 years in spite of the fact that he had leukemia and had the injury from the bomb. After his healing, he would give of himself to his family, to his people, to his church, care for his 2 children. He wrote over a dozen books on spirituality, peace, and the effects of radiation. His first book, one of his books, The Bells of Nagasaki, became a bestseller. It was made into a movie. And he would give the money from the proceeds of his books to help rebuild the church and the community. In the first months after the bomb, he eventually returned to the site of his leveled home with his 2 children, and his community built a little hut for him. And it's still there, and he called it Niyakoto, which means love thy neighbor as thyself. So it was love thy neighbor as thyself, hut. And he lived there. He eventually was bedridden, but he carried on writing, painting, taking visitors, corresponding with people. And here's an image of him inside Niyakoto with his 2 children. At this point, he's bedridden. You can see the kind of correspondence he gets. And you also see him smiling. He was a joyful person in spite of his immense sufferings. He's everyone, all the biographies write about this, how he's a jokester. He liked to laugh. He was a joyful person. Anyway, so he becomes bedridden. But before this, just right after the bomb, this is decimated community. They lost everything. What were they to do? What was the surviving Catholic community to do? Well, the cathedral was destroyed. Their world was destroyed. Many in their community, including Midori, had been killed. What was decided that the Catholics would have a requiem mass, a mass for the victims of the bomb. And the bishop of Nagasaki asked Takashi Nagai to speak on behalf of the laity. So the mass was held. It was going to be held next to the ruins of the cathedral. And in preparing for this, Nagai walked among the ruins and sat among the ruins in the cathedral, thinking about what he would say. And here are actually a couple pictures of Nagai walking in the ruins. You see him there. And he's actually in mourning garb, and you still see the thing on his head, walking with a stick, walking through the ruins, thinking about what he's going to say. Or during this time, he's thinking about what he's going to say at the Requiem Mass. The Mass was held in November 23rd, 1945. You see here, it's held right near the ruins of the cathedral, and Nagai gave a eulogy. And I want to just share with you some of what he said in the eulogy, because it's remarkable. Well, first he spoke about the significance of August 15th. August 15th is the day that Japan finally surrendered, and he explains it was also on August 15th August 15th is also the Feast of the Assumption of Mary. The cathedral actually bore a Marian name. It's the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception, and it should also be noted that it was on August 15th, 1549, that Francis Xavier first landed in Kagoshima and said the first Mass in Japan. He said that the Urukami Catholics who died had been a sacrifice of atonement for the sin of war. Urukami, he said, was chosen as a pure lamb, slaughtered and burned. He noted Nagasaki's long history of persecution and suffering. He said our Urukami church had persisted for 400 years, shedding the blood of numerous martyrs as it protected the righteous faith. And he referred to it as a great holocaust. Hansai is the Japanese word. Holocaust, or peace offering. And he urged his fellow mourners to regard it as something beautiful, something pure, something sacred. Now, he acknowledged the great loss to the city. He said, Urukami is in complete ruins as far as one can see. It's all ashes and tiles, no houses to live in, no clothes to wear. We stand aimlessly in the fire ruins. So what were they to do? Well, he urged his fellow Catholics to look to Christ, who shouldered the cross up the hill of Calvary. He will certainly grant us courage when we carry upon our shoulders the heavy burdens of reparations, being ridiculed, mocked, whipped, soaked in sweat, covered in blood, hungry and thirsty. In other words, by looking to the cross, they could find strength and find deep meaning in their sufferings. They were given the opportunity to share in Christ's sufferings. In this they could rejoice. As he put it at the end of the eulogy, alas, let us always praise the work of the omniscient and omnipotent Lord. Let us give thanks for the Church of Urukami having been chosen out of the entire world to be offered in the Holocaust. Now, one way in which he illustrated this understanding was this painting that he did of his wife Midori. So this is Midori. You can't quite see it, but she's holding her rosary beads. And you see that she's standing there on top of the mushroom cloud of the bomb. So this is an illustration of his idea of Hansai, a peace offering to end the war, even seeing Midori as part of that offering. Well, as you can imagine, reactions to these words were mixed. But Nagai himself never backed away from this interpretation, this theodicy of the bomb. He didn't even qualify it. Even near the end of his life, he reaffirmed the appropriateness of Hansai, Holocaust, peace offering. Because of Christ, there was profound meaning in suffering and death. What was a message he would, continue to share with others? A friend of his, a guy named Ichitaro Yamada, had been in the military and was on an island elsewhere. So he wasn't in Nagasaki, but his parents were. His wife and five children were all in Nagasaki. all of them perished from the bomb. So he goes to Nagai and he goes, I'm mad. I'm angry about this. And Nagai empathizes. He says, yes, I lost my wife, Midori. I've lost, you know, my health, my job, you know, my community, my home. I understand. But he said to Yamada, he said that the only way open to anyone who believed the gospel was to see the A-bomb as part of God's providence. Setsuri is the Japanese word. Setsuri, part of God's providence, which always brings good from evil. Yamada became, you know, and stayed a good friend of Nagai's. And together they decided they would go up to the cathedral to see if they could recover one of the bells. So you saw the images of the cathedral being destroyed. One, there are two bell towers. The left tower was completely blown off and the bell crushed and broken up. And the right tower, it was pushed into the ground and under a pile of rubble. So they decide, this is December 1945, actually Christmas Eve, December 24th. They decide they're going to go up there. They get a group of other men to dig into the rubble and see if they could find that bell. So they do that. This is, again, December 24th. They worked all day. Finally, about 6 o'clock, they see the top of the bell. They use a block and tackle, and they lift the bell from the rubble. And amazingly, it's all intact. here's an image of the bell being pulled out of the rubble, Well, they decide they want to see if it works. This is Christmas Eve. And they rang out the Angelus bell, and because all the buildings were leveled, it rang far and wide, and it was a sound of hope to the struggling Christians who lived amongst the rubble in Urakami and Nagasaki. Now, this is a picture of another one of my interlocutors, a man named Father Hitoshi Kataoka. He's a retired Franciscan priest and an absolutely lovely man. And he was actually in the cathedral of the morning of the bombing. He was part of a group of older boys. And the people in line, most of them were younger kids, and this group of older boys cut in line. So they were able to go to confession and get out and get home before the bomb was dropped, and thus he survived. He lived kind of southwest of the cathedral up a hill. Nevertheless, the bomb was dropped, he was inside, thus he was spared, but he walked outside and he literally saw his brother burn alive and die. And his mother, his grandmother inside the home also died. Anyway, in my conversation with him, he tells me all about this, but he also tells me that he remembers these men digging up the bell. And he remembers them ringing it out. And he says it's a moment in his life that has deeply been impressed upon him. He just simply can't forget the sound of that bell ringing out on that Christmas Eve. And I'll give you a direct quote of my interview with him. This is what he said. He says, I remember very well when that bell was rung. And I remember it because at that time, there were no cars, there was nothing. It was very, very quiet. And then the sound, the gong of the bell, that sound is still in my memory. It is still in my ears. I can still hear it from when I was a child. 75 years later, 76 years later, that sound. This was such a beautiful sound. There was nothing that stopped that sound from traveling, no houses, no trees, no natural sound, no nothing. Out in the fields and near the mountains, the sound itself rang. I have forgotten many things that I cannot forget. He was 9 years old at the time. Well, the Urakami Catholics eventually rebuilt their cathedral in the same place where it stood before the bomb, which is itself one of the spots where the Urakami Catholics were made to step on the fumie. So it was a place of persecution. The bell recovered by Nagai and Yamada and the other men on that Christmas Eve is one of the bell it's in the bell tower of the rebuilt cathedral that rings today. Well, the rebuilding of the cathedral was somewhat controversial. The image of the ruins had become iconic. This is actually a painting of the ruins by Nagai that he painted from Yamada-san's house. So I really like this one. And it's actually in the museum next to the Niokodo. Well, many wanted to keep the ruins to remain as a reminder of the devastation of the bombs, similar to what happened in Hiroshima. So Hiroshima kept a building. So this building is called, they refer to it as the A-bomb dome. So it's still there today, and they just left it. And it's a reminder of the atrocities of nuclear warfare. And it's also a tourist attraction, and it's right near Ground Zero in Hiroshima. And they want to do the same thing in Nagasaki. Like, you think that makes, you can understand that. There are the ruins of the cathedral. It has a kind of haunting beauty to it. It would be a reminder of the atrocities of the bomb. And also, it had become a tourist attraction. People came to look at this, to look at the ruins. When you read about the accounts of people who visited Nagasaki, often they make reference to the cathedral. That is right after the bomb. Okay, so the Catholics wanted, however, to rebuild the cathedral, and there was a bit of a controversy, but in the end, the Catholics prevailed, and they rebuilt the cathedral, and this is what it looks like today. And the right tower is the bell that was dug up by Nagai and Yamada-san. So the difference between these two buildings, I think, also illustrates the difference between the whole notion of Hiroshima rages, Nagasaki prays, right? Hiroshima rages, that's a sign of protest, right? The A-bomb dome, and Hiroshima, Nagasaki prays is they rebuilt the cathedral. Now, I should add that there's still all sorts of evidence of the original cathedral. Even these statues, you can't quite see them, are all from the original, and their heads are missing, and they're burned, they're stained glass representing the cathedral inside the church, etc. So it's not as though they've removed it. And at the epicenter, there's one pillar from the church that has Francis Xavier on top of it facing the epicenter. In May of 2023, I interviewed this man, Yujiro Moriuchi, and he also is a direct descendant of Tera Moriuchi. So remember that earlier man, Murasu Matsuo? They're cousins. So I interviewed him. He's also five generations removed from Tera Moriuchi, one of the women who went to Father Petijin back in 1865 and revealed herself, the discovery of the hidden Christians. And at the end of my interview, he said to me, wouldn't it be great? He goes, you know the bell in the right tower is there, but you know the left tower all these years remains empty? So he said to me, I said, no, I didn't know that. He goes, wouldn't it be great if some American Catholics gave us that bell? I said, well, that sounds like a really good idea. And so to make a long story short, after I got back home, I wrote to the Archbishop of Nagasaki, Archbishop Nakamura, who I had also interviewed for my research, and told him about this and said I would like to do it. And he gave his enthusiastic blessing. He said that would be beautiful. And so I set about, trying to fulfill this request by Morishi-san. So here is the remains of the old bell. You see that? The one that was smashed up. Those are some of the pictures. It's in a little museum next to the cathedral. And the long story short is, I was successful. I was able to raise money. I gave talks all over the country. We raised over $125,000. We said that we would like to make the bell. We'll pay for transportation and installation. And the happy ending is that we did so. There's the bell, same shape, design, even some of the Latin from the original bell we have on it. We have a different saint, the Saint Kateri. It's actually called the Saint Kateri Bell of Hope. And it was shipped to Nagasaki in May of last year. And then on July 17th, it was installed. So this is a picture at the installation ceremony. Here you see a picture of Archbishop Nakamura blessing it with holy water. There's yours truly. And next to me is Yujiro Moriuchi, who invited me to give the bell. And then it was lifted up and put into the left tower and rings today. In fact, it rang for the first time August 9th at 11:02, exactly 80 years after the bomb was dropped on Nagasaki. Okay, let me conclude though by offering a brief word on the bell that's in the right tower. Okay, so the one that was dug up by Nagai and Yamada-san. So here's a photo from July 1947, and the bell dug up by that group of men, which is in the right tower. And in this picture, you see just to the right of it, Yamada-san. So he was the one who dug it up with Nagai. And then up there on the ladder is Morichi-san, the guy who invited me to give the bell. It's his father. And so when I first went to Nagasaki some years ago, I had read about the bell. I'd read a lot about Nagai, and I wanted to see the bell. So I asked someone, I said, can I see the bell? And they said, well, no, it's up in the tower. But in the vestibule of the church, there is a picture of it. So I took a photo of the picture of the bell. So this is it. This is the bell that was dug up. And I don't know if you can see it, but if you look closely, emblazoned on it is an image of the cross. Can you see that? Here's a closer view of it. You see it now? image of the cross that's on the bell. And it really struck me. I actually didn't even see that until I got home and looked closely at my photos. And it struck me that this was quite fitting, as it was the cross that was the source of Nagai's joy, of his ability to forgive, to advocate for peace, and to help rebuild the church in the city. This is the reason that Nagasaki prays, right, rather than rages. For Takashi Nagai, as Paul Glynn writes, one of his biographers, he says, "The Holocaust of Calvary gave meaning and beauty to the Holocaust of Nagasaki. Thus, a particular theology gave meaning to those who suffered from the bomb, just as it gave meaning for generations before to those who suffered years of persecution for their faith." And it's a lesson for all of us, isn't it? Our little sufferings and our big sufferings. One cannot understand the response in Nagasaki, peace, forgiveness, reconciliation, joyful rebuilding of their church and community, without understanding this Christocentric theology and this unique history. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.